My name is Michael Hart. Thank you all for inviting me here again. As many of you know, we Unitarian Universalists have an annual meeting in which we gather for a few days every year. It's called the General Assembly. The most recent General Assembly took place 3 weeks ago in New Orleans. Some of you were probably there. This GA was quite different from most I've been to, largely because of all the controversies and changes that are going on in our denomination. You may or may not know what I'm talking about when I say controversy, so I'll try over the next few minutes to explain what I mean. Here's what I know about what's been going on in the denomination. The Unitarian Universalist Association is organized into five regions, each with its own staff of administrators who help UU congregations with various things. It could be religious education, leadership development, finances, dealing with conflict, whatever it is. Each of these five regions has a lead administrator. Now, back in March, a new regional lead was hired for the southern region. In other words, the one that covers the southern states. That new hire happened to be a white minister. One of the applicants who was not chosen for this position, a Latino woman from Virginia, wrote an open letter that was published widely, noting that the previous five administrators hired by the UUA had all been white men, that in fact most of the senior executives in the UUA were white men, and she was wondering what the white man who was hired this time had to offer that she didn't have. Well, Peter Morales, who at the time was the president of the UUA, said he had been trying his best to find people of color to fill jobs, but had had difficulty coming up with qualified candidates. Morales noted that the people of color on the UU staff had increased from 14% in 2008 to 20% today, and that the proportion of managers had gone from 5% to 9%. Others quickly pointed out that those were still very tiny numbers and that that was not much progress to show over a nine-year period. So in other words, his comments did not help very much. And within a few days, he had resigned in frustration. That was followed by the resignation of two more senior UUA executives, both white men. And around the same time, and by a very unhappy coincidence, the UUA moderator, the association's highest-ranking lay leader, died because of cancer. So suddenly, there was a significant leadership gap at the top of our denomination. There was also a feeling that the hiring of this white minister, who quickly, by the way, decided not to take the job, was the proverbial straw that broke the camel's back. There was a feeling that it was time for a massive rethinking around the fact that while we perceive ourselves to be progressive people, indeed, we are one of the least diverse religious denominations in the United States. Certainly, we all do our best to welcome Latino and Black people to our congregations. But we cannot deny that when we look around our churches on Sunday mornings, we mostly see well-educated, financially comfortable white people. While we live in a nation and a culture that is diversifying at lightning speed, more than 80% of UUs today are white. This led a UU organization called Black Lives UU, or BLUE, to organize anti-racism teach-ins that were held in a number of UU congregations around the country in April and May. It was an opportunity for our overwhelmingly white congregations to reflect on whether we truly are welcoming of people of color in our communities. Likewise, much of the programming for the General Assembly was shifted to the same anti-racism, white privilege topic. So, for instance, there were sessions with titles like Navigating Race, Authority, and Power in Ministry and The Role of White Silence in Racial Discussions. Now, I think we all understand there are things that we do in our churches that make white people comfortable and that there are things we do that make people of color sometimes uncomfortable. We get it that a token sermon on the Sunday before Martin Luther King Day does not make us less white-centered. And nor does occasionally singing De Colores make Latino people happier to be in our midst. And I think that focus on racism at the General Assembly this year was a good start toward resolving an even more serious problem that I think is impacting not just UUs, but American religion in general. Along with other mainstream Protestant American religions, we are all going to have to do a better job if we want to remain relevant in the 21st century. And our white-focused attitudes, which are largely hidden even from ourselves, are just the beginning of why our membership rolls are not growing as fast as we would like them to. Census figures tell us fewer than 18% of Americans now go to church. In 1900, there were 27 churches for every 10,000 people in the United States. Today, there are 11. Now, obviously, most of us here today feel like gathering in this room every Sunday morning is a pretty good way to participate in the life of this community. But as we can see, many people do not think it's a good idea. Somehow, despite all this, we Unitarian Universalists keep going. The UUA's latest official count is that there are 221,000 UUs in the world. Now, unlike most American religious denominations, that number is not shrinking. However, it is not growing that quickly either. But there is a twist for us. If you look at the surveys of religious practice in the United States, for instance, the most recent one from the Pew Forum on Religion and Public Life, you find that the number of people who say they are Unitarian Universalists is closer to 800,000. So, if the number of people who say they're UUs is almost four times the number who are official members of congregations, where are they? Obviously, they're not here. And the knee-jerk response of many of us would be to ask ourselves, why not? What are we doing wrong? Well, maybe that's the wrong question. Maybe the right question is, what do the people who aren't here want out of religious faith? A few years ago, the UUA launched an initiative called Congregations and Beyond. The goal was to go out and find those people who identify themselves as UU, or would if they knew about us, and figure out a way to serve them that goes beyond simply giving them a place to go on Sunday morning. It's why we have something called the Church of the Larger Fellowship, which started out many years ago as a way for UUs who did not live near a church to stay connected. Today, it is more of a resource clearinghouse for UUs who simply do not want to be connected to a traditional church. It even offers a worship service every Sunday morning in the form of a webcast. It has a live chat component so you can participate in joys and sorrows electronically with people all over the world. So officially, the Church of the Larger Fellowship has a membership of 3,500 people. But when I asked the UUA in preparation for today about it, they told me that more than that participate every Sunday in the webcast worship service. So knowing that, what does it mean to be a UU today? For the last 100 years or so, the UUA has primarily been a collection of congregations in brick and mortar churches like this one. But how much longer can that last? I first started thinking about this a couple of months ago when I reread, of all things, David Copperfield, and I learned that its author, Charles Dickens, had claimed to be a Unitarian. When I investigated that factoid a little bit, I discovered that being a Unitarian in England in the 19th century was not quite like being a UU in 21st century America. It's likely Charles Dickens never ever went to a Unitarian church on a Sunday morning. In those days, saying you were a Unitarian was like saying you're a humanist today, or a progressive, or a free trade capitalist. 150 years ago, Unitarianism was more of a philosophy, a set of ideas, than it was a place where you might go to worship. In those years, churches were not even a significant part of Unitarian culture. In fact, the church we like to call our oldest, the First Parish Church in Plymouth, Massachusetts, was indeed founded by the Pilgrims in 1620. However, it didn't become officially a Unitarian church until somewhere around 1830. So given that historians can trace the roots of Unitarianism back to Romania and Poland in 1565, churches like ours are a relatively new phenomenon. And who's to say that gathering on a Sunday morning in a church like this is the best way to practice a religion? Is it possible that the message we carry to the world and the work we do could be more effective in some other form, perhaps like that practiced by Charles Dickens 150 years ago? And what, by the way, is our work and our message to the world today anyway? When we say we believe in the inherent worth and dignity of every person, or that we believe in justice, equity, and compassion, does that mean that our role is to go out and actively fight for those values every day? Some of us do. Some of us do believe that. Or is our role to inspire others to do that? Many of you saw the PBS documentary a year ago called Defying the Nazis, The Sharps War, about Martha and Waitstill Sharp, a Unitarian minister and his wife who helped hundreds of people escape from Nazi Germany. Is their value measured in the number of people they helped escape, or in the number of people their story has inspired to take action themselves over the ensuing 65 years. And going beyond the subject of white privilege in our churches, I think it may just be as important to ask the question, are we thinkers or are we doers? We tell the world one of our core principles is the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. So are we at our best when we are thinking our way through the great imponderables? Or is our finest moment when we actively join the fight for the things that we believe in? My guess is that as individuals, our answers to these questions change all the time. I think as a denomination, they change frequently as well, because so much about Unitarian Universalism changes all the time. How many of you know how and why the Flaming Church came to be our eternal symbol? Well, it wasn't that long ago, despite the fact it's eternal. In 1941, the Sharps, who I just mentioned, had a problem. They were working from Madrid with people from many European countries to help refugees, and they needed a symbol that would be easily identifiable to people who did not speak or read their language. So they asked a Dutch designer to create an icon for them that would be understandable by everybody, that they would know that they were Unitarians without having to say so. Somewhere along that line, that icon became our eternal symbol. And what about our seven principles that are on the back of this order of service that seem etched in stone? In fact, they didn't exist at all until Unitarians and Universalists decided to merge in 1961. And even then, it provoked a discussion about what exactly the two religions had in common, so much that it took until 1984 for the current version to be codified and declared our principles. So clearly, we can change. And it's not just us. Religions do it all the time. But what about our faith has never changed and never will? I believe there are at least two fundamental commitments that will stay with us whatever form our UU movement takes in the future, wherever we practice it and however we practice it. The first one is easy, the second one, not so much. The first one comes out of the mouth of Waite Still Sharp, and I am going to go on faith that he said the words ascribed to him in the PBS documentary. When someone asks him why he and his wife had sacrificed so much, put themselves in peril so many times for people they didn't even know, Waite Still said, "I don't like to see guys get pushed around." It doesn't matter what hyphenate you add to UU when you describe yourself. Atheist, humanist, theist, Christian, Buddhist. And it doesn't matter who the guy is. Immigrant, woman, Jew, transgender. We don't like to see guys get pushed around. And we never will. And the second, that is the hardest part for us. The second is that we will always try to work in community together with each other and with anybody who wants to join us. James Luther Adams, a 20th century Unitarian theologian, said nobody can be a Unitarian by themselves. It is only when people come together and put their faith into action that religion is practiced. Today, it is being practiced by us here in this room. But it is such a small room. If we want a Unitarian Universalism to be the religion of the 20th century, 21st century, we must become truly the welcoming congregation we tell ourselves we are. Are any of you guilty of something I have been guilty of? You're in a conversation over coffee after church, and somebody smirks as they say, "We UUs can't agree on anything," as if it's a virtue. And you nod and smile. Or they say, "We UUs are special for this reason," or "We UUs are special for that reason," and you agree. We UUs are a breed unto ourselves. Now, the next time you hear somebody, and maybe even yourself, say that, think of how it sounds to a person visiting your church for the first time. The person who has gathered up his or her courage and ventured into a new place with people they don't know in search of something positive they can't even define for themselves. Wonder for a moment what you're communicating to them. And I hope it's not that this is an exclusive club that only the most special of us can join. We must grow this community of ours, but we can change. Finally, our religion and our communities do not have to be as complicated as we make them. They can be built on the simple words, "We don't like to see guys get pushed around." Using another religious faith as an example, for 1900 years, Catholic priests said Mass in Latin with their backs to their congregation. Then one day after Vatican II, they turned around and started saying it in the language of those right in front of them, be it English or Spanish or Chinese or German. Now, if Catholics can adjust to that shock to their systems, we UUs can adjust too, and we will. No matter what our movement, our commitment to social justice and community will never end. Thank you.